Welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast for a Friday episode. We're having fun here. As we record this on Wednesday, we are watching something that is incredible. Liberty in the third quarter is down 17-21 against Kennesaw State. Now, why is that crazy? Well, because Liberty is 5-0 and Kennesaw State is 0-6. Liberty's potential bid at the college football playoff is coming down to a potential loss to Kennesaw State.
In their first season as an FBS program.
That, my friends, would be insane. But we are going to talk about the college football slate that is happening on Saturday. And to do that, I have my partner in crime here, Corey Kinnon, the fake Corey Kinnon on X. I can't believe I just called it X, formerly Twitter. And I am Dalton Miller. I hope you guys have a good weekend, but let's talk about what I'm going to jinx it on purpose because I jinxed it a couple of weeks ago and it ended up being one of the best weekends of college football I've ever seen. This weekend stinks. The matchups stink. There are some okay college football games here, but from a prospect perspective, stinky. We're going to talk in depth about the ones that we actually like in this college football slate. Corey, where are we starting?
Yeah, man, that is a great question because you could start at the end if you really wanted to this week.
When there's like nothing until the 3:30 slate.
If we want to just start by talking about a fun college football game, Indiana has continued their playoff bid and their Big Ten run here, and they're playing against a team that was in the national championship a year ago. Clearly, they were gutted, graduated a lot, sent a lot of talent to the NFL, lost their head coach. Not a great football team, but Indiana is without Curtis Rourke at least this week, so. Can they keep up the hot streak? Can they win? They're at home. It's in Bloomington. Mm-hmm. College game day is going back to Bloomington again this week, which is incredible. But can they sneak it out? And before Rourke, because Rourke is designated week to week, and he had surgery on his thumb, and they said he could be back next week. And they play Michigan next week. So getting him back would be great.
Well, they don't need to score points in that game.
No. Yeah, you're right.
The one good thing about this, and we talked about this in podcast the other day, West Coast team coming to Indiana. Mm-hmm. How is that going to go? Hopefully it helps Indiana out a little bit because I think that they are the best story in college football for my money. Do we want to talk about Nebraska and Ohio State at all? Is there anybody to talk about from Nebraska against Ohio State, Corey?
I think probably just Tommy Hill, Nebraska corner. It's probably the only one. He's been playing pretty well. He's probably, if I had to guess, late day two to mid day three, kind of in that range, like probably a top 125 grade on him right now. He's going to have his hands full against Emeka Egbuka, Jeremiah Smith, who might be the best wide receiver in the nation at 18 years old, probably is the best wide receiver in the nation at 18 years old. So he'll have his hands full in this game. This will be a good test for seeing just how far along Dylan Raiola is, because I think he's had a rough couple weeks here, even though Raiola is not draft eligible for two more years. But this is going to be the best team he's played all season as well. Again, Ohio State should win this game pretty easily, and they're at home. They showed some cracks against Oregon, some pretty big ones, too. I have my takes on the kind of coach that I think Ryan Day is and the toughness of that football program in general. So we'll see how they bounce back in that game.
Yeah, they have a pretty big weak spot in a spot where we didn't think there was going to be a weak spot on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
Anyways, we can move on from that game. A great game. Something that I'm so interested in seeing is Notre Dame versus Navy. No prospects to talk about in that game, pretty much whatsoever. I think that Notre Dame's quarterback would be incredible to watch at Notre Dame because I think the best thing that he does is run the football. That is obviously Riley Leonard. But I just think that this is an awesome college football game. Two very historic programs here. Mm-hmm. Navy 6-0. Army also 6-0.
Army's undefeated too. Yeah.
Yes. Army is also undefeated. So super interesting matchup there. Man, Oklahoma and Ole Miss would be something to talk about if Oklahoma wasn't so injured and right now so terrible. I mean, I guess if you wanted to bring up something, you could bring up those two safeties at Oklahoma against Trey Harris and Antoine Juice Wells and Jackson Dart. But like, that's it, because the corner play at Oklahoma, and they have a bunch of fourth, fifth, and sixth year guys playing corner for them. Not very good. So really tough season for Brent Venables there at Oklahoma. And we talked about it. We would love to see something on the, you know, offensive line, because Oklahoma is always recruited well on the offensive line, but the offensive line might be the worst one we've seen in over a decade there. So just a tough game to talk about from a prospect perspective.
Yeah. On paper, this should be a pretty ugly game for both sides, because I'm not overly sold on Ole Miss's offense since they've entered SEC play. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty ugly down in Norman right now, all the way around. So we'll see what happens there.
Sure.
You know, we'll always be turning into Bowling Green, because we're going to watch to see what Harold Fannin does. It's the Harold Fannin show every time he takes the football field.
Pretty obvious he's going to go for like 170 yards.
Yeah, that's pretty true. He hasn't broken 200 yet, though, so we're still waiting on him to drop two bills. But it's going to happen. I feel like it's going to happen.
He just goes and flirts with it every week.
He does, every single week. I have heard some rumors that he might be leaning towards going back to school and transferring up. And I have heard some rumors that another Ohio school is extremely interested in him that has a lot of money. I don't know if I could be any more obvious about that than it is, but we'll see what happens there. I do want to talk a little bit about Maryland, Minnesota, because there are three pretty good wide receivers playing in this game. Again, I don't think trying to find matchups of draftable prospects is extremely difficult. But there are three really good wide receivers in this game, two for Maryland, one for Minnesota. Daniel Jackson from Minnesota is I think a day two player, man. I think he's a pretty good talent. It's hard to poke a hole in his game other than like he doesn't have a defining elite trait, like a standout trait, but he's very smooth, well-rounded. And then the Maryland guys I talked about on the Dafter draft episode. I brought up the Maryland guys on a recent episode. I don't remember.
Yes.
But Ty Felton and Caden Prather are two really fun players. Caden Prather, again, 6'3", 210, has played exclusively X, but he has some really nice fluidity at 6'3", 210. To where he could be a really solid product at the NFL level playing just X. Teams want that. Teams need that. I mean, look at the team like the Cowboys, where their best receiver loves to play Z and loves to play at the slot. You need a guy who can go out and just play X. So I think you look at situations like that. And then Ty Felton, man. Whew. I mean, that dude probably runs a low 4.3 at 6'2" and 200 pounds. Like, he's pretty real thin, but I think I comped him to Darius Slayton when we talked about it on that podcast. And I see a lot of that where he is just a burner on the vertical plane, man, an absolute playmaker on the vertical plane. So that'll be fun to watch those two wide receivers. And then again, the Maryland quarterback's not going to declare this year, but he's my best bet to be a Taylor Heinicke type player at the NFL level, where that career backup who can give you really quality starts as a spot starter as well. And Billy Edwards Jr. Again, I ultimately think he's probably going to transfer and make a lot of money to go back to college football for a fifth year. Yeah. Because why not in today's era? If you're just going to be drafted to be a backup, go play another year of college football. So, but he's a lot of fun, dude. He is a dog. He's just like that dog quarterback. So he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. And just the watching the emergent of Ariante Arisery. Yep. Obviously, Like there's not much from Maryland to talk about edge rusher wise. Kayshon Fuller and Donnell Brown. One is more of like your more traditional defensive end. That is Fuller at 265 pounds, and then Brown at like 250 is kind of like your edge linebacker type of hybrid. So it shouldn't be much of a problem for somebody like Ursary, who I think he might be just slotted in as that next tier down at OT5, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, some people really like love
Jonah,
him.
Yeah, because, like, Jonah is probably a guard. Like, and that's the problem. It's like he might end up being OT2 because the three of the top five guys are guards. Yeah. But
it's hard to – I used to think that, like, no, Jonah Savainai is a guard. But now I'm like, but he's playing really well at tackle. Mm-hmm. And I think I undersold his length. Like, I don't think he has 32 inch arms. I think he probably has at least 33. Like, yeah. I think not a direct comp because Rashawn Slater was just so clean and so dominant. And there was no hole in Rashawn Slater's game. But, like, I think he's a pretty similar body type to Rashawn Slater.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit denser. But he still has really good foot speed at his, he's 330 pounds, but he's got really nice foot speed at that size. So, like, why can't Jonah Savainai be a tackle? And why couldn't he be potentially OT2 or OT1? I don't want to go that high because I really do love Cam Williams, and
it sucks because we just watched Cam Williams go up against Georgia, and Georgia has two of the best pass rushers in college football, and then a third pass rusher who isn't draft eligible yet, who had a day against Cam Williams. And the other day when I brought up, and that's how like focused I get on guys when I'm watching tape, like what I saw from Cam Williams against Michael and against
Jalen Walker
was pretty good. And then I watched number 10 line up against him and I said, oh shit. All right.
Yeah.
He's getting beat. And so if I'm not like watching a game just like overall to watch that side of the ball, I get hyper focused on guys and I don't see anything else. And that's why it takes me like I'll watch the same game from a Georgia team or an Alabama team, or an LSU team, or Ohio State, I will watch that game 37 times before the end of the year because I'm watching one guy from there, or I'm going back and rewatching it to see if I missed something. Like, it's just, that's how it is. And I know a lot of people can kind of macro it. I cannot. I got to focus on one thing. I cannot multitask when I'm scouting.
Yep, I agree. I tried to do that. Like there was a year where Penn State had two draftable linebackers and I tried to take notes on both on the same play. They watched the same play twice, and it's a mess.
Yeah, Jihad Campbell and Deontay Lawson. Nope. I'm watching them individually.
Oregon tackles can't do it. Nope. Yeah, I've got to go back and just watch the same game over again and then flip it to the other report. Yeah, for sure.
With offensive tackles, I will go sometimes. I'll go sideline view and watch the guy on that side from the sideline view and then watch the end zone view of the other guy. And then when it switches to the next quarter and they switch sides, then I have the sideline view of one and then the end zone view.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, I'll do that early on.
Fascinating. Yeah. All right. Next game worth talking about a little bit is Illinois, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
You love JC Davis. Love is relative to the offensive tackle class and the tools that he has. Ultimately, you love him as a day three player you can develop into maybe an eventual starter.
Yes.
And again, Jordan Birch is questionable-ish. Again, they don't think game day designations at the college level. But Dan Lanning's kind of said, like, we'd love to, but we don't know if it's going to be this week. But they do have the younger Uyunglele brother who's not draft eligible, but who is a force off of the edge for Oregon. So that's a matchup to watch. Again, on the other side, Illinois does have Gabe Akis, who I've liked since his freshman year. Again, I think he is what he is. He's pretty stiff. He's got a really nice power profile, though. So Gabe Akis, he'll play some five tech. He'll play some three tech. So he's going to go through the chest of Josh Connerly and Ashani Cornelius. And Josh Connerly specifically, who has some core strength and anchor issues that are pretty notable. I kind of want to see how he holds.
Well, I was going to say we thought you're
just rusher. Yeah.
We thought, but then he played really well against Ohio State, and those guys are mostly speed to power guys as well. So the game against Gabe, and I actually just watched Gabe, and I like Gabe's game overall. I think he's a pretty good player. So that will be interesting to watch in this one. I wish that there was something at Illinois to really talk about from the defensive back position against.
They do have a corner actually. Xavier Scott, I believe is his name. Let me double check on the name there. But Xavier Yeah, Xavier Scott from Illinois. He's a sleeper corner that a lot of people really love. In this, a lot of analysts have
what year is he?
As a deep kind of cut in this class, but he's potentially could be. He is a junior, a true junior. So he's already got 3 interceptions, 5 in his career. So Xavier Scott against and he matches up body type and athleticism wise really well with Evan Stewart. Who Evan Stewart is coming off his best game of his college career. Because I didn't think Evan Stewart was having a good season. And then he made Denzel Burke look like burnt toast over and over and over and over.
Well, he's coming off two of his best games because then they also played Purdue the next week and he went 4 for it wasn't as big as the but it was 4 for 96. And that just shows, I mean, the big playability, the speed, it's ridiculous. And yeah, he made Denzel Burke look like he was standing still.
Yeah. So I do want to see kind of Xavier Scott again, 5'11", 190, that same kind of, Evan Stewart's a little bit bigger than that, but same similar builds, athletic profile. Mm-hmm. That might be a one-on-one matchup for watching that game as well. And can Evan Stewart do it again against another draft?
Yeah. Next game, Missouri and Alabama. Can Alabama right the ship? Can Jalen Milroe specifically right this ship? I think we both kind of just admit last week was his worst game of the year. He was just completely off. Can he get his confidence back? Can he find the confidence in his decision-making and in his arm again? Because I haven't seen it for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah. 2 weeks in a row with what I would call UDFA tape.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But I mean, he was missing shallow crosses on clear out concepts. And it's just like, man, these are layups. Like he was missing layups, even down the hashes over the middle, just like way behind, wrong shoulder, just forcing crazy adjustments from his receivers. And, you know, I'm dropping my quarterback rankings piece. My it's a little bit further midseason, but my updated quarterback rankings piece at kind of the midway point where I feel like I have a good enough sample size charting wise to really have a strong take. And it's hard to elevate him in this class anymore. You know, he still ultimately could, like some team could fall in love with the tools. But man, I haven't seen it to where I would draft that guy on the first 2 days of the NFL draft right now. Over the past 2 weeks, like that's how bad it's been after Georgia. And then he played well against Vanderbilt, even though they lost that game as well.
I thought he played really well against Vanderbilt, but they ran 42 offensive plays. They just didn't have the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see again against a Missouri defense that not a lot of notable talent. So we'll see what happens there. Again, we got to talk a little bit about Luther Burden as well, but I think Alabama has a lot of stars in that defensive back room, but not a lot of on field.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. Damani Jackson, 5-star. Malachi Moore. I think Malachi Moore is a guy to talk about because he plays a lot in the slot as well. So
he'll get a lot of spacing matchups one-on-one against Burden. So that could be something to watch. Can he get it down? Can't get him to the ground.
It probably won't go very well for Malachi Moore. I will say the one thing Malachi Moore does really well is tackle. I think his coverage has always been suspect. But he comes downhill really well. Or I always thought that he came downhill really well against the run. So it will be interesting to see if he is able to keep up with Burden. And then, yes, like you said, when Burden gets the ball, can you tackle him? Because that is going to be tough.
Because he's a thick boy.
Because he is a thick boy. In the backfield, like I wish that there was a defensive line matchup against any of the offensive linemen from Alabama, because a lot of them are draft eligible and are probably going to end up going to the NFL, moving forward. But there really isn't much to talk about from a prospect perspective back there either.
No. Not on Alabama's offensive line. From Missouri's offensive line, I think we can talk a little bit about Armon Membo, who plays right tackle for Missouri. But again, there's some pretty obvious length restrictions on tape. But he does have a nice guard build. Like I think his arms have some nice girth to them. Not length, but some nice girth to them. And I think his lower half is really well put together. And he'll be going up against a guy that we've deemed first team all bad body at the college football level. He'll get some one-on-one matchups against a legitimate 6'4", 285 pound inside outside rusher who's going to try to go through his chest. So this is a good test to say, like, how will you portray as a guard? Here's a 285 pound defensive lineman who's going to try to go through your chest. I think the Membo Overton matchup right there has some merit to it as well.
Yeah, I also think Marcus Bryant, from what I watched in the Texas A&M game, I also think he's an NFL player as well. I thought that he had a really good game against that Texas A&M duo, who we believe are two of the best in college football.
Yeah. So, for sure. All right. We didn't talk about this off air. I want to watch this game more for how they handle their quarterback situation. Texas Vanderbilt. Is Quinn Ewers going to get 100% of those snaps, or are they going to start splitting again? Because they have a little bit of a gap here in their schedule. Again, Vanderbilt's not really a team to look past because they've shown they can beat some top-tier talent and they'll juice the clock. But you do have Vanderbilt, Florida, Arkansas, before you get to Kentucky and Texas A&M there, who have pretty strong defensive talent on those two teams. Do you start to split reps between Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning? And potentially by November 23rd, when they host Kentucky, do you make a full-time switch? Like that, I really do want to monitor that because even when Quinn Ewers came back in that game, he still did the Quinn Ewers stuff where he's just throwing 4 yards in a cloud of dust from the line of scrimmage and checking everything down. So like, I don't think Steve Sarkisian can watch that tape even when Quinn Ewers played the entire second half and feel good about it. So we'll see. Again, I have this quarterback piece that just came out as this podcast, the same day this podcast came out today, Friday, we're recording on Wednesday, whatever. But and I was not kind to Quinn Ewers in that piece. Like, I'm going to call it what it is. I gave him a fifth round grade. Like, I don't think this guy deserves to be drafted in the first 2 days of the NFL draft to the point where I texted somebody this. It might not have been you. I think his body is breaking down on him. Like, he has been.
You said it on the podcast.
I said it on the podcast. I think his body's breaking down on him. I legitimately do. He's been hurt 3 years in a row, and it's been shoulder injuries and core injuries. Those are two, like, if a quarterback position, that's where you generate your arms. Like, that's where you generate velocity from, is your shoulder and your, like, your core and your hips. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I just genuinely think that he is not generating a lot of velocity. And you had mentioned you didn't love his arm talent coming into the season, and I think it's even worse. Like, watching that Georgia game, like, he's throwing the ball over the middle, and it's taken a while. Like, there's not a lot of RPMs on those footballs to his receivers. He's throwing the ball 10, 15 yards over the middle, too. So, we'll see. I genuinely think they're going to start splitting reps between Quinn and Arch at this point. I think they have to.
We'll see. There was a rumor that he was going to sit out the rest of the year. That was quickly deleted. That happened. There was Sark being, I wouldn't say defensive over it, but saying, you know, giving him the vote of confidence. He is our starting quarterback, which, listen, when we get to that point and we have to give votes of confidence,
yeah,
we're in a tough spot.
You're in a tough spot. Yeah.
So
we have to vocalize it.
Yeah. So
there's something underlying
that. Nothing in Florida State, Miami to talk about. Florida State was supposed to have one of the best defensive lines in college football, and that entire team is not good. So nothing really to talk about there except for how many touchdown passes is Cam Ward going to throw for in this game to really try to push the Heisman agenda.
Over under time to throw 4 seconds in this game.
His average in this game will be 3.78.
Which is still very high.
Which is very high, yes.
Yeah.
Let's get to the big game. Let's get to the big game and get out of here.
Yep, I agree with that.
And it's arguably the biggest matchup of the year between two offensive tackles and two pass rushers. All guys who could go in the top 15 of the NFL draft, in my opinion, come April. That is left tackle Will Campbell, right tackle Emory Jones, pass rushers Shamar Stewart and Nix Gordon. There is nothing.
It's gonna be a lot of fun.
There is nothing else I care about this weekend.
No.
I want to see every single snap that these guys play against one another. I am so excited.
Absolutely. Again, because Nick Squirton generally tends to stick to rushing over the left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get a lot of Will Campbell on Squirton. And again, we've talked about Squirton's ability to get in the Frankenstein episode. I chose him for pass rush plan. He's going to throw a lot at Will Campbell. Yeah. So Will Campbell just can't set up on and look to protect his outside shoulder because Squirton can spin back inside. He can cross his face and he can go through his chest. So, and we have talked about that outside shoulder has been Will Campbell's susceptibility. Kyle Kinnard and the freshman from South Carolina took advantage of that in that game. So we'll see. I do think that Emory versus Shamar Turner is going to be like a heavyweight fight because their strengths align one another. Like Emory Jones' strength is
Stewart's
strength.
Stewart.
Did I say Turner?
It's so easy.
It is so easy.
These guys have Shamar the same Stewart. First name. One of them wears number 4. One of them wears number 5.
Pretty both similar like body types.
6'4", 290.
Yeah. Shamar Stewart and Emory Jones, because it's going to be a heavyweight fight. Because if you look at Emory Jones' strengths, it is his core strength. It is his anchor. And if you look at Shamar Stewart's strengths, it's the ability to add that shock value with his hand. I mean, heavy hands, explosiveness, looking to drive you back into the pocket through the chest. So that's going to be like a Holyfield Tyson in my opinion. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch that match.
I'm also really interested in Cassius Howell when he comes in for Squirton as a spell, because he is that length, you know, arc rusher as well. And I want to see how he does against Will Campbell too. Yep.
Former teammate of Harold Fannin.
Yes. Former teammate of Harold Fannin.
We can't go an episode without talking about Harold Fannin.
Obviously the two quarterbacks, Connor Wegman and Garrett Nussie, big ones to talk about here. And then
we kind of waved the white flag on Wigman for at least this year.
Yes.
And he's got to put a healthy season on tape. He has to.
Talk about bodies breaking down.
Yeah.
Willie the third against about the only person that Garrett Nussmeier cares to throw the football to, Kyron Lacy. There's also, so it's not just Kyron Lacy. Because I do think Taylor, I can't remember Mason his Taylor. First name. Mason Taylor.
It's easy to remember because awesome. His dad is Jason Taylor. So it just rhymes with his dad.
Oh, Jason and Mason. I never put those two together. But I actually kind of like him, especially like what he does with the football in his hands, specifically because like every single route that he catches is in the flat. But
it's in the flat, yeah.
A fun little athlete, I mean, which shouldn't be a surprise given who his father is, but it will be interesting to see how he does in this football game as well. No, like, linebackers to talk about for Texas A&M, but I am interested in Willie versus Kyron Lacy. That's another one of the matchups I'm looking for.
And people love to talk about Garrett Nussmeier's sack avoidance. And it is, he does have a really low sack pressure to sack rate. And he does tend to avoid sacks at a high level. The South Carolina game was the most pressure he faced thus far. He's going to face a lot of pressure. And again, even though he has some sack avoidance and some like really good highlight clips of maneuvering the pocket, I think he's kind of a drifter in the pocket. Like he comes off his line and he drifts left a lot. I don't know if you said you were going to watch him in depth. I don't know if you did it today or you're doing it tomorrow, but that's something that I noticed is he drifts off to his left a lot. Like Desmond Ridder used to do that. And he used to drive me up a freaking wall, like stay on your line and step. And Nussmeier doesn't tend to do that at a high level. And he's going to see a lot of pressure from both interior and edge. So I think we're going to see some pockets collapsing on him. And how does he handle that in this game is something that I'm going to be watching pretty closely as well.
Yep. And then I think that's it, Corey.
I think that's it too. I think it's a good place to stop.
Yep. Unfortunate news. Not that it would have been like a prospect matchup to talk about, but SMU, number 22 in the nation, 3-0 in the ACC, lost their best offensive weapon to an ACL injury. That is RJ Maryland. Hopefully he comes back healthy and blows up next year because he is a fun player.
Yeah, that is disappointing. Very disappointing. Hey, just a heads up as well. Kennesaw State is, while we close this out, is back up 7 with 8 minutes left. Liberty is driving, looking to tie the game, but they are back up 7.
Crazy. Crazy if they lose.
Talking about the G5 program, G6 program now, with the most money to blow on players and NIL deals, because those conservative Christians know to shell out that change to get some recruiting going on there. They should have an at-large bid every year moving forward. Like, Liberty has no excuse not to have an at-large bid every year. Mm-hmm. They play in Conference USA.
Those mega churches got money.
They do. They absolutely do. And there's a lot of political donations from that come into that school. Mm-hmm. That's probably enough of like religion and political talk about, you know, on this podcast. But
it's about football.
This is
about football, though.
They have the most NIL money of any G5, G6 program out there, and they play in the weakest G6 conference. They have no excuse not to have an at-large bid every single year. So that's going to be interesting to see how this game finishes out. Little thing to end on the podcast there.
And that's it, guys. I hope that you guys enjoy your weekend. We will be back on Tuesday to give out helmet stickers and talk about this weekend, which is going to be unreal. It's going to be amazing because I said it wouldn't be amazing. So, as always, guys, I am Dalton Miller. He is the fake Corey Kinnon. I love you guys. Goodbye.